I just don't know. Do I write, I promise never to do it again 500 times on the blackboard and miss recess? Do we get a divorce? Do we never mention it again? What? She didn't feel hysterical, only tired, but her voice was rising in a way she didn't like and hadn't intended. The shame was the worst. The shame of being found out and seeing how it had punched his face in. And she hated him as well as herself for making her feel so badly ashamed, because she didn't believe she was responsible for the factors leading up to the final decision, if there really had been a decision. We ought to be able to get it together, he said. But she did not mistake him. He wasn't talking to her. This thing... He looked at her pleadingly. He was the only one, wasn't he? It was the one unforgivable question. The one he had no right to ask. She left him, almost ran up the stairs before everything could spill out. The stupid recriminations and accusations that would not solve anything, but only muddy up whatever poor honesty they had been able to manage. There was little sleep for either of them that night. And the fact that he had forgotten to call Joe Camber and ask him if he could work on his wife's ailing Pinto runabout was the furthest thing from Vic's mind. As for Joe Camber himself, he was sitting with Gary Pervier in one of the decaying lawn chairs which dotted Gary's Runda Riot side yard. They were drinking vodka martinis out of McDonald's glasses under the stars. Lightning bugs flickered across the dark, and the masses of honeysuckle clinging to Gary's fence filled the hot night with its cloying, heavy scent. Cujo would ordinarily have been chasing after the fireflies, sometimes barking and tickling both men no end. But tonight he only lay between them with his nose on his paws. They thought he was sleeping, but he wasn't. He simply lay there, feeling the aches that filled his bones and buzzed back and forth in his head. It had gotten hard for him to think what came next in his simple dog's life. Something had gotten in the way of ordinary instinct. When he slept, he had dreams of uncommon, unpleasant vividity. In one of these, he had savaged the boy, had ripped his throat open, and then pulled his guts out of his body in steaming bundles. He had awakened from this dream twitching and whining. He was continually thirsty, but he had already begun to shy away from his water dish some of the time. And when he did drink, the water tasted like steel shavings. The water made his teeth ache. The water sent bolts of pain through his eyes. And now he lay on the grass, not caring about the lightning bugs or anything else. The voices of the men were unimportant rumbles coming from somewhere above him. They meant little to him compared to his own growing misery. Boston, Gary Pervier said and cackled. Boston! What the hell are you going to do in Boston, and what makes you think I could afford to tag along? I don't think I got enough to go down to the Norge until I get my check cashed. Fuck you, you're rolling in it, Joe replied. He was getting pretty drunk. You might have to dig into what's in your mattress a little, that's all. Nothing in there but bed bugs, Gary said and cackled again. Place is crawling with them, and I don't give a shit. You ready for another blast? Joe held out his glass. Gary had the makings right beside his chair. He mixed in the dark with the practiced, steady, and heavy hand of the chronic drinker. Boston, he said again, handing Joe his drink. He said slyly, kicking up your heels a little, Joey, I guess. Gary was the only man in Castle Rock, perhaps in the world, who could have gotten away with calling him Joey. Kicking up some whoopee, I guess. Never known you to go further than Portsmouth before. I've been to Boston once or twice, Joe said. You better look out, pervert, or I'll stick my dog on you. You couldn't stick that dog on the yellow nigger with a straight razor in each hand, Gary said. He reached down and ruffled Cujo's fur briefly. What's your wife say about it? She don't know we're going. She don't have to know. Oh, yeah? She's taking the boy down to Connecticut to see her sister and that freak she's married to. They're going to be gone a week. She wants some money in the lottery. Might as well tell you that right out. They use all the names on the radio anyway. It's all in the prize form she had to sign. Won some money in the lottery, did she? $5,000. Gary whistled. Cujo flicked his ears uncomfortably at the sound. Joe told Gary what Charity had told him at supper, leaving out the argument and making it appear a straight trade that had been his idea. The boy could go down to Connecticut for a week with her and up to Moosehead for a week with him in the fall.
And you're going to go down to Boston and spend some of that dividend yourself, you dirty dog,
Gary said. He clapped Joe on the shoulder and laughed.
Ah, you're a one, all right.
Why shouldn't I? You know when the last time was I had a day off? I don't. Can't remember.
I ain't got much on this week. I'd planned to take most of a day and a half pulling the motor on Rich's International, doing a valve job and all, but with that chain fall, it won't take 4 hours. I'll get him to bring it in tomorrow, and I can do it tomorrow afternoon.
I got a transmission job, but that's just a teacher from the grammar school. I can put that back. A few other things the same way. I'll just call him up and tell him I'm having a little holiday.
What you going to do down in Beantown?
Well, maybe see the Dead Sox play a couple of Fenway. Go down there to Washington Street.
The combat zone. Hot damn, I knew it.
Gary snorted laughter and slapped his leg.
See some of those dirty shows and try to catch the clap.
Wouldn't be very much fun alone.
Well, I guess I could tag along with you if you was willing to put up some of that money my way until I get my check cashed.
I'd do that, Joe said. Gary was a drunkard, but he took a debt seriously.
I ain't been with a woman for about 4 years, I guess,
Gary said reminiscently.
Lost most of the old sperm factory over there in France. What's left, sometimes it works, sometimes it don't. Might be fun to find out if I still got any ram left in my ramrod.
Yeah, Joe said. He was slurring now and his ears were buzzing. And don't forget the baseball. You know when the last time was I went to Fenway?
Nope.
1968, Joe said, leaning forward and tapping out each syllable on Gary's arm for emphasis. He spilled most of his new drink in the process. Before my kid was born. They played the Tigers and lost 6-4, those suckers. Norm Cash hit a homer in the top of the eighth.
When are you thinking of going?
Monday afternoon, around 3, I thought. The wife and the boy will want to go out that morning, I guess. I'll take them into the Greyhound station in Portland. That gives me the rest of the morning and half the afternoon to catch up whatever I have to catch up.
You taking the car or the truck?
Car. Gary's eyes went soft and dreamy in the dark. Booze, baseball, and broads, he said. He sat up straighter.
I don't give a shit if I do.
You want to go?
Yeah.
Joe let out a little whoop and they both got laughing. Neither noticed that Cujo's head had come off his paws at the sound and that he was growling very softly. Monday morning dawned in shades of pearl and dark gray. The fog was so thick that Brett Camber couldn't see the oak in the side yard from his window, and that oak wasn't but 30 yards away. The house still slept around him, but there was no more sleep left in him. He was going on a trip, and every part of his being vibrated with that news. Just he and his mother. It would be a good trip, he felt that. And deep down inside, beyond any conscious thought, he was glad his father wasn't coming. He would be free to be himself. He would not have to try to live up to some mysterious ideal of masculinity that he knew his father had achieved, but which he himself couldn't yet even begin to comprehend. He felt good, incredibly good, and incredibly alive. He felt sorry for anyone in the world who was not going on a trip this fine, foggy morning, which would be another scorcher as soon as the fog burned off. He planned to sit in a window seat of the bus and watch every mile of the journey from the Greyhound terminal on Spring Street all the way to Stratford. It had been a long time before he had been able to get to sleep last night, and here it was, not yet 5 o'clock. But if he stayed in bed any longer, he would explode or something. Moving as quietly as he could, he put on jeans and his Castle Rock Cougars t-shirt, a pair of white athletic socks, and his kid. He went downstairs and fixed himself a bowl of Cocoa Bears. He tried to eat quietly, but was sure that the crunch of the cereal that he heard in his head must be audible all over the house. Upstairs, he heard his dad grunt and turn over in the double bed he and his mom shared. The springs rasped. Brett's jaws froze. After a moment's debate, he took his second bowl of Cocoa Bears out on the back porch, being careful not to let the screen door slam. The summer smells of everything were greatly clarified in the heavy fog, and the air was already warm. In the east, just above the faint fuzz that marked a belt of pines at the end of the east pasture, he could see the sun. It was as small and silver bright as the full moon when it has risen well up in the sky. Even now the humidity was a dense thing, heavy and quiet. The fog would be gone by 8 or 9, but the humidity would remain. But for now, what Brett saw was a white